I've just seen the biggest impact on my mental health and just my overall everything, you know? And I think it's really important for me, because I always say, like, human connection and community is everything, but leaning into that and seeing really what has come out of it in my life in the past year and a half by making that a priority has been probably one of the most significant things for not only my health, but my personal and professional growth.
This episode is brought to you by WeWork. Being able to work remotely is a game changer. You don't have to spend time and money commuting, and often you can work from anywhere in the world. But it does have its downsides. It can be pretty lonely working from home, and if you're off traveling, it can be really hard to find somewhere to sit down and work without a sticky table. That's where WeWork comes in. WeWork is co-working space with offices all over the world. They have everything you need: fast Wi-Fi, free tea and coffee, and loads of desk space and meeting rooms, so you always have somewhere to get your work done, whether that's alone or with friends and coworkers. And with WeWork On Demand, you can book co-working space by the day and meeting rooms by the hour at locations all around the world. Thanks to our friends at WeWork, you can get 50% off your next co-working space booking. Head to we.co/Bryan50, that's Bryan50. Download the WeWork app and enter code Bryan50, that's Bryan50, to get 50% off your next booking. Here we go.
My name is Dr. Jonathan Leary. I'm the CEO and founder of Remedy Place, and I'm on Behind the Brand with Bryan Elliott.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the show. Jonathan, thank you for having us to your home and what I would assume second sort of Remedy Place.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to be here. I'm really excited for today.
It's my pleasure. I usually ask my guest, how did you get this job?
Oh man, I mean, this was the dream. You know, I started working on Remedy Place in 2012. And at first it was really just to make sure that my practice didn't look like a clinic or a hospital, and just to create a different environment that I never saw before in the healthcare space. And then it really just evolved over the years. And even though I worked on that business plan through my whole doctorate, every Sunday I put aside the afternoon to like Google how to do everything. And when I graduated, I went to the bank, had this 158-page business plan, thought it was, would leave with a big check and, you know, build the dream, quickly realized it's not how it works. And I had to then open up my concierge practice, not because it was fancy, but honestly, it was because it was the cheapest option. And I had that for 5 years before Remedy opened. And I got to do 5 extra years of clinical evidence and market research and really truly understanding my patients, what worked, what didn't work, what were they willing to do, what were they not willing to do, common lifestyle habits. And then just, I end up learning from my patients. You know, my patients became my mentors. And then, you know, it was about 4.5 years ago, I was able to open the first club.
So let's go back. For those who don't know, you know, maybe specifics of your doctorate degree, it's a DC or?
Yeah, okay. Doctor of Chiropractic.
Yep.
And then my private practice focused on a non-surgical, non-drug approach for surgery prevention and chronic pain rehabilitation. But it was a really cool blend where I would do everything from functional medicine, your chiropractic, your physio, and Chinese medicine, but all in one.
Mm-hmm. And was that here, you know, where... in an undisclosed location somewhere like West Hollywood Hills. Are you from LA?
I'm from Rhode Island.
Okay.
So I grew up in a small town over there, but moved here when I was 22.
Okay. Yeah. And so you did your schooling there and then moved here?
Did my undergrad there, did my doctorate here. Mm-hmm. Thought I was going to move to New York after I finished, but then I kind of got stuck here. And then I've been here ever since, until about a year and a half ago when I got my spot in New York.
You know, a lot of people who watch and listen to this series, I think they're at different stages. Let's put them in two buckets.
Yeah.
One is, you know, I'm surprised to continually get messages from people coming right out of school. It could be high school or college. I'm surprised. I was like, hey, I'm 16. My teacher told me to watch this
cool.
Because, you know, it's a series for entrepreneurs and I want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Or if you're in college and just graduating, you're trying to figure out what you want to do. But there's a whole other bucket of people who are hitting reset right now.
Okay.
And maybe they're, you know, like 30 something or 40 something, and they're not happy. Like they went to law school.
Yeah.
And they're like miserable as a lawyer. And they're hitting reset right now, trying to figure out like where their real passion is. And so I asked this with that context. Did you always know that this was going to be the path? Did you know what you wanted to do?
I always knew I wanted to help people.
Okay.
But in Rhode Island, I was never exposed to alternative medicine or even sports medicine or anything other than conventional medicine. And when you're doing pre-med, you know, you have to get your hours in, volunteer, you know, shadowing. And I, for 4 years, was like, I don't know if this is what I want. You know, I saw the doctors overworked, not healthy, away from their family and kids, not sleeping, late nights. So their life was really stressful.
Like, that looks amazing. I think I'd like to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And then you would see in the hospital setting, like, no one's happy if you're in the hospital. You know, it's scary. It's a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And a lot of emotions.
It smells bad. Yeah.
It smells bad. And then, you know, you see like the food and there's like so many things that I'm like, this isn't what I envisioned was how I wanted to help people, but that was the only way that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really shifted after that. But I've always known that I wanted to get into the healthcare space and that I needed to do something different.
Yeah. Did you have outside influence? Like, did you have people recommending, you know, like your parents or friends or like, hey, you should do this?
No. Well, one of my friend's dad was a chiropractor.
Okay.
And in Rhode Island, you know, most chiropractors would partner with a lawyer and then do PI cases.
Mm.
And I was like, this is not what I wanted to do.
Right, right, right.
But he had an interesting perspective because he's like, you know, John, I know you want to move to LA. And in California, a chiropractor is a primary care physician and they can treat or diagnose anything. They just can't prescribe meds or puncture the skin.
Mm.
So when I went into this program and switched my mind from going traditional route to this, it was really like, hey, I don't even want to do chiropractic. I just want the scope to be able to do whatever I want to treat people. And then I started getting chiropractic care when I was in school for the first time. And I'm like, oh, wow, this actually works. And then you start doing, you know, work in school and practicing. You're like, wait, this actually works.
There's something to this.
Yeah. And then the science and everything really started to add up. And I'm like, wait, how come I was never exposed to this? And then you start learning more and more about the functional medicine and Chinese medicine. And it was so fascinating because it was really putting the control back into the patient's hand. You know, like, your body is this amazing healing machine and it has the ability to heal when you give it what it needs and you take away what it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for those extra 4 years in school, I studied so much about human physiology, biochemistry, you know, biomechanics, to understanding the human body in a way that most people never get that detailed on, because the difference between alternative medicine like med school versus just normal med school is the amount of education on pharmacology. So a medical doctor is studying medicine. So that is what they're studying. For me, it's great for me to take those pharmacology classes, but instead of knowing more and more about drugs, I was knowing more and more about the body. And then it's a puzzle, you know, like when you know the body and you know what's off and then how to fix it, it's about putting the puzzle pieces back together. And it's a lot easier than people think.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that we're walking around in this, you know, meat suit, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and we have no idea how it operates.
No.
We don't even have an operating manual.
Yeah, I say it all the time. I'm like, your body's your number one asset, and you don't even know how it works. Never mind how to take care of it.
Yeah, my car has, you know, 300-page manual.
Yeah.
Like when I want to change the oil and or the tires, I just had to, you know, get new tires. So it's like, I know exactly what to do, but like with my body, which I am so close to.
Well, even think like,
I know
think
nothing.
Of all of like your whole career, you know, your roadmap and your plan and the hard work and what you need to do, like your business plan of life for your career to fix it, to be successful. I want to give that to everyone for their body, you know, and that's really where Remedy comes in is eventually this free educational platform to teach people how to take control over their health, because no one's going to make you healthy. It's only you are going to make you healthy. You just need people to teach you and guide you and maybe help facilitate certain things and give you the tools.
Yeah. And I would guess that for everyone, that realization comes at different times.
Yeah.
Because there was a time, you know, all through my 20s, maybe up through early 30s, I'm about halfway done now, but like, I didn't think about my health at all.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't an issue. I could eat 6 or 8 tacos, no issues, no worries. Like I was good to go, you know, drink, play, eat.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was fine. Everything worked great.
Yeah.
Right. Bounce right back. Play a game of pickup basketball, wake up the next morning, go for a run, go to the gym. It's like everything was fine until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then you're like, uh-oh, like I took all that for granted.
Well, it's crazy because if we were just taught the importance of it at an early age, it'd be, you know, so much better. But we were just always told it's expected, you know, like you're just healthy. You know, like yeah. I was never told you had to put in the work. Like people with the fitness craze and that evolving, you know, that was really the first correlation of like normal, regular care. But remember, working out still is stress in the body. You know, it's a good stress. You don't only want to train your muscles. You need to train every system in your body.
Well, it's not just that, too. It's like, I realized that I wasn't training correctly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all the things I learned. I played three sports in high school. I played football, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I played baseball and I played soccer. And all three sports, you know, varsity letterman and blah, blah, blah. Thought I knew everything about, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Until then, you know, later on in life, I was like, oh, I've been lifting weights wrong my entire life. Or
yeah.
my running form is bad. Or my recovery
yeah.
is wrong. You know, like I have it all backwards. So it's like, you're right. There's no, and it's so hard, again, with all the information out there to sift through it to know, well, what's truth?
Yeah.
And what's theory, what's actually efficient and efficacious, and what is snake oil?
It's so hard, right?
It is.
It's like, at first, we just wanted people to move, and that's great. Like, movement is better than no movement, right?
Right.
But then every fitness program has always been built off of, for the most part, as like the history is like strong and powerful, right? It's like athletic moves, athletic training, but for the average person. But unless you're an athlete, you don't need to be strong and powerful. You need to be functional and pain-free. So I think it's like no one has taught anyone from all these athletes, you know, that had the trainers and the attention that eventually once that's done, it's a whole new form of training.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone's always looked at athletes and those trainers to figure out, even if I'm not an athlete, that's how I should train. But at the end of the day, like your biomechanics and like stability, mobility, your muscle imbalances, if you understand how your body moves, you can always get your pain, you like get your body pain free.
Mm-hmm.
And addressing the weaknesses and not what you're good at. Like you shouldn't be going to the gym and just doing the same thing. It's like, no, what is weak? What isn't moving? What's not stable? What's not mobile? And what are these imbalances? And it's very prescriptive.
Yeah.
You know, but. And that takes a lot of education because I think most trainers too, like anyone could go get certified in a weekend course, but no one can learn the body in a weekend. You know, it's something that has to be mastered and really successful programming has a lot of science to it. And I hope eventually that trainers have to be at the level of almost a physical therapist because you can do a lot of good and you also can do a lot of bad. And it isn't just about looking good. That's a very small percentage of it.
Right.
It's really about getting your body to move perfectly or as close to perfect as possible.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know, again, some of these things you don't notice until it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Right. Like we were talking off camera when I was in New York and I was like, you know, just out of the blue,
yeah.
My arm has got pain.
Yeah.
Like, that's new.
Yeah.
That's new. And so I was like, I wonder what I did or didn't do. You know, maybe it's just a function of, you know, genetics or maybe I had the wrong kind of movement or not enough movement. It's like, how are you thinking about fitness and recovery when every body is different?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important that people think a lot of the times when they have an injury or this flare up that it's like, oh, I went to go reach for that paper. Or, you know, I was just reaching that top cabinet and I threw out my back.
Sneezed.
And they don't realize, like, your body's so good at adapting to pain and getting in these antalgic positions. But all we are, our whole life, is just getting closer and closer to the cliff edge. But you don't know until you fall off, you know? And I think it is the biomechanics and the poor movement or the lack of movement over years mm-hmm. or decades that eventually something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they expect, oh my God, you know, I can get pain-free overnight, you know, like a couple weeks and I'm good. And it's like, no, you have to understand, it took you a long time to get there. And if we're doing it the right way, we can be preventative the whole time.
Yeah. Or worse, you know, you think a couple of Advil will do it.
That's not a path. Even think about like the pain problem in America right now, like opioids. If you're in pain and you numb it, numbing it's not fixing it. So I think, you know, people take these pills and then they go about their day because they don't feel it. And then they're aggravating it all day. And then it wears off and they're in more pain. And then they take more. And this is where it becomes an issue because we don't see that the biomechanical issues that are off that are causing the pain are not being fixed by you numbing it.
Yeah.
And how we're addressing pain in America is just completely wrong. And that's scary because, you know, like opioids are very addicting. And obviously we know that there's been a major crisis. And most people, if you ask anyone, everyone has some level of pain or one old injury or at least tight somewhere. And most of the time they're just like, oh, I'm just waiting for it to go away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, and I'll speak from experience. So in my defense,
yeah.
And again, I told you this story, and I've told this story actually many times on this show.
Okay.
So many people have heard my story, but I'll repeat it again just so you understand. I really wanted to get better. I started to have headaches.
Yeah.
That was my thing. Just out of the blue. And I saw every doctor possible to try and fix it.
Yeah.
And the headaches were getting so severe that I was worried, like, am I dying? Like, is that what's happening right now? Yeah. Well, so I started with big ticket items and I started from the top down. I went to see a neurologist first. I got an MRI.
Yeah.
Got a brain scan. I was like, do I have a tumor? Am I dying? Is this what's happening?
Yeah.
Turns out, no.
That's great.
The neurologist said, oh, you just have migraines and chucked pills at me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Then I went to see the cardiologist, did a carotid artery scan, heart scan, you know, worried about the ticker.
Yeah.
And he said, no, everything looks pretty good. You have a little genetic high cholesterol, but you know, with a little diet and exercise, we can fix that.
Good.
But then he goes, you know, at some point, you know, maybe in like 4 or 5 years, maybe put you on a statin.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't sound great, but you know, thanks for the information. He did tell me though that my red blood cell count was a little high.
Okay.
That made me curious. So then I saw like a pulmonary expert and I did a sleep test. Okay. And I found out I had like mild apnea at the time.
Okay.
Which I didn't know what apnea was. Sleep apnea, for those who don't know, is like, you know, if you're overweight or if you're at a certain age, your jaw can start to relax and your actually tongue falls back in your mouth a certain way and you stop breathing at night.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's severe and you can wake up gasping. That didn't happen to me. I was like micro suffocating.
Okay.
like 20 times.
Just a tad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I wasn't noticing it. I was unconsciously waking up and going back to sleep 20 different times a night. So I was waking up in the morning feeling exhausted. Exhausted, fatigued, like I got hit by a truck or like I was out partying. And I was like, what is happening? Anyway, so long story short, I saw all the doctors and each one of them was so myopic to my case. And, you know, the neurologist, of course, was just thinking about the brain and the head, and the cardiologist was just thinking about the heart, and then the pulmonary expert was just, anyway, so right on down the list, the net was no one could solve the issue.
Yeah.
And so I realized at that point that I needed to take responsibility for my own health. And I started asking friends, started, you know, researching on the internet. I talked to friends, and it was in one of these interviews I was doing with a professional athlete. And it was Russell Wilson, actually, who was the quarterback of the Seahawks at the time. And Russ is like, Brian, I think you might be dehydrated. I'm like, no, Russ, I drink plenty of water. He's like, no, electrolytes.
Yeah.
I was like, come again? Electrolytes, you know. I was like, no, I don't know. What are you talking about? Like Gatorade? He's like, no, Gatorade's got way too much sugar.
Yeah.
It's garbage. You need to make sure that you're replenishing like sodium, magnesium, potassium. He's like, oh, okay. So I looked into it. Sure enough, you know, I had a deficiency. So I started supplementing with more electrolytes. And like in 2 weeks, 50% of the headaches were gone.
Yeah.
So then I started focusing on sleep because everyone's like, sleep's the gateway. And I tried to, you know, the pulmonary guy, the doctor said, you need to have a CPAP machine. If you know what that is,
yeah,
it's like sleeping with a starfish on your face.
Yeah, not as comfortable. No,
it's super romantic too.
If very, very romantic.
Sleep with a partner. It's like, hey, I'm gonna put this mask on. Peace out. Like within like 48 hours, I realized, okay, this is like a deal breaker lifestyle wise. I'm not doing this. So I sent that back, and I was like, okay, how do I solve my apnea? Just turns out I got like a new pillow, slept on my side. Ate a little bit better, lost like 5 pounds.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
And it was gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Here's the thing is like, what's wild is, you know, all those doctors did the right thing. You know, they tested their specialty.
Yeah.
They asked the right questions.
Good intentions.
Yeah. And they also like, they prescribed what they were trained to prescribe.
Yes.
But I think what I've seen with my patients, remember like having this sports medicine practice focusing on surgeries and chronic pain, I wasn't treating other things, but throughout my practice, I started to treat other things because when you do functional medicine and you actually look at everything going on in the body, and for those of you who don't know what functional medicine is, when you go to your medical doctor, you get diagnostic blood work, and that's just to see, are you sick or are you not sick? Functional medicine is a series of different blood tests that will actually measure every single deficiency, toxicity level, sensitivity, analyze every single organ and system, your gut, and it basically gives you the blueprint to your whole entire body.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see what you're deficient in and you're seeing these imbalances, remember all these different biochemical reactions all use multiple things. So you can start looking at these chains of reactions. And if you know that you're missing a couple of these very important markers, you might just have headaches. It might explain your gut issues.
Yeah.
You know, like, and all of a sudden in my practice, it was like, oh, my, you know, my gut issues are gone. My depression's gone. My autoimmune condition isn't having any flare-ups. And they're like, what are you doing? You healed me from this. I'm like, I'm just giving you what you need.
Yeah.
And then the body knows, like, it doesn't matter what you're dealing with, but it's crazy that that is not what everyone's annual physical is, because it's not covered by insurance. And that drives me insane because it's not diagnostic. And I'm like, I don't care what you have. I want to know how your body's functioning and what I need to do to fix it.
Yeah.
Or what is the root cause of your problem?
Yeah. And it's amazing how several of these things are connected, right? Or it's kind of like one affects the other.
All. Yeah.
Right. And so, like you said, the body knows how to fix itself.
Yeah.
But there might be one little thing standing in the way. Like for sleep, because I was not getting sleep, it was my blood was thicker.
Okay.
More, you know, more red blood cell count. So I was getting less oxygen to my brain also when I was, you know, not breathing correctly. That was giving me headaches as well.
Yeah.
And then also cortisol levels were much higher because I was stressed out because I didn't have enough sleep. So yeah, you just eliminate one of those little roadblocks and then things start falling into place.
Yeah. And that's what's so cool also too. Like there are these foundational pillars that, you know, from movement to nutrition to mental health, to like these free self-care practices that work across the board. And you don't need to go on all these different fancy programs or these fancy diets. It's like, no, it's actually very simple. And if everyone just took those principles and adapted it to their life, they would get better. But they have to put in the work. That's the thing is like, if you're lazy and you don't want to do the work and you don't want to make lifestyle changes, you're not going to get better. But if you're willing to do it, or if you want, like, even it's not even about not being sick, it's about being the best version of yourself. And you get one life. Like, why wouldn't you want to see what you could do, what you could be successful with, whether it's your relationships, your career, you know, your health? I mean, anything. And that's what I'm so excited about. In my practice, it was a reminder every single day how grateful I needed to be for my health because I wasn't in their shoes. And it didn't matter how much money you had or how successful you were. When your health goes to a certain point or it's irreversible, you can't buy it back.
Right.
You know? And when you are your healthiest self, you are happier. You are shining brighter. You are more successful. Your relationships are better. I mean, you're more like the way you even shine, like everything about you is different. And it's like there's no finish line. So imagine if you just kept shining brighter and brighter and brighter. Life, you can do anything you want in life. And the healthier you are, the more that you can actually explore what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, it goes without saying, but maybe it's worth saying again for those who are not there yet, but it's like your health is everything.
Yeah.
And when you don't have health, I mean, it's the only thing, it's such an obstacle. It's like everything else, then you can't function almost if you don't have health. And so it's not about addressing it when it's broken. It's about this preventative maintenance, right? Preventive yeah. maintenance to keep, you
to
know.
Perform.
To perform and, you know, yeah, it's mental and physical, right? Like
and emotional.
You one know, affects everything. The other.
And I always say it's like performing is performing in life. Like every one of us is performing. Performing as a parent, performing in your work, performing in your relationships. I mean, everything. Mm-hmm. And it was just wild to me with all my pro athletes that I was like, why are they the only ones paying this much attention? And it was like, oh, that's their career. They need to perform. I'm like, well, don't we all need to perform? Mm-hmm. And it was, that's when I started treating patients that weren't athletes. And I transitioned my whole sports medicine practice to the average individual because I'm like, we all need that same level of care mm-hmm. and attention.
So you were the successful doctor, you had a growing practice, and then you sort of decided to put that on pause, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it was
when
hard.
When did it happen?
Yeah, I mean, the first year that we opened Remedy, I slowly transitioned out, but it kind of came back to this principle of, I was a year into my practice and fully maxed out wait list, and one of my patients looked at me and she was like, John, you know, this is amazing, and like, this is very cool to watch, and like, you finally started to like, really become successful within your career. But she looked at me, she was like, how are you going to change healthcare though if you only see one patient at a time?
Yeah. And what year was this? Give us time.
That was in 2016.
Okay.
So it was, you know, into my practice, and I was like, you know, you're right. Like, it doesn't matter that I'm maxed out. There's only so many people I can see. And if the vision really is to reach the masses, I can't do that. And that's when I brought Remedy back to the table and started working on the business plan. But then when I tried to at least see some patients, you know, you get it. As an entrepreneur, there's yeah. things and stressors and fires every minute of every day. And I just found that I could be on an investment call, then be healing a real estate deal, and then a partnership, and then someone is late, and then I'm sitting in with a patient, and then I have a marketing meeting after. And although my patients would never know, I didn't feel like I was 100% present within that time with my patient. Mm-hmm. And the moment that I started catching myself a couple times, I'm like, it's not as fair, because energetically, like, I need to make sure that I'm giving this everything that I have. And you know, when someone's really struggling, they're very dependent on you. And I'm like, I'm not the type of guy that is like a little bit in. I'm 100% in or 100% out.
And really?
Yeah.
couldn't tell. Yeah.
And that was where I was like, okay, you know, like, the mission of Remedy is to help reach more people than any company in the world, right? And truly make people feel better. But I have to give up seeing the patients mm-hmm. and grow this brand. And the occasional time that I get to work on a patient, I'm like, oh, you know what? I miss this.
Yeah.
But I also love what I'm doing right now. And, you know, it's, and seeing how many people it's helping already each year, and even on a daily basis, I'm like, this is so cool.
So, you know, this series is called Behind the Brand. We talk about branding and brands a lot.
Yeah.
People watch and listen to learn how to grow their brand. How did you come up with the Remedy brand? Talk about, like, how do you see brand?
Yeah.
Like, what is a brand? And then talk about the Remedy brand.
Yeah. Brand is everything. You know, I think it's, when I was told that before Remedy opened, and like, you meet with branding agencies and they're all so expensive. And I'm like, it's like, does it really matter? It's just the name. Like, it doesn't matter. And then you realize, like, I think because of these past 4.5 years and understanding the power of the brand being so strong and people connecting with it and that relation and that awareness of that brand, it changes everything about the business. It yeah. changes how you're able to raise money. It changes how you have to market or don't have to market. And it also just changes how people interact with it. And so many times before, like, you see a lot of brands or companies that just don't care. And then it's very clear, like, you can have a very strong brand. You could have the same numbers and the same model, And the one that is has the brand and that presence and that attraction, you're going to be able to get so much more, you know? And I think it's really interesting to watch because it's like a restaurant, right? You can, there's a million restaurants, there's a million gyms, but you're going to go to the one that you're most connected to. And that can be for a wide array of reasons.
Yeah, there's a 24-hour fitness brand, and then there's an Equinox brand, and then there's, you know, 50 others in between. So how do you define brand? Like, what is brand to you?
Brand is just the root of the core of who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that is when you're building your brand, you're also building the type of community that you want to attract to it.
So how did you do that with Remedy? Like, how did you start building that brick by brick?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, every Sunday when I worked on that business plan, at first, I just knew that I wanted it to be the exact opposite of a clinic or a hospital. So what I did for Remedy is I just looked at every single thing that I saw and I completely made a 180. Like, hospitals and clinics were white and sterile. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be dark and moody. Mm-hmm. They would use how they would communicate with medical jargon. I wanted to be the exact opposite. So it was in layman's terms. Like, mm-hmm. And I started comparing everything that I didn't want it to be and then started, you know, constantly updating it. And I wasn't even until, you know, a year or two, like well into like us operating as a business that, you know, you finally figure it out. And a brand isn't something that just created overnight. It's something that is constantly worked on and perfected forever. And it's very, very hard to make something simple. And it's very, very hard to make something like easily digestible. Mm-hmm. And I think the key to success is simplicity. And the more that you can simplify whatever you're doing and make it more approachable or like more easier to understand, the better.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you do to make it more easily understood? I love this lesson, you know, and if you missed it, sometimes defining what it's not is a great way to help people understand what it is.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's the opposite of, so how did you help people understand your vision for it?
Yeah. Honestly, listening, mm-hmm. you know, us on, like, I've given so many press interviews. I've talked to like so many people about this brand and you just start to learn, you know, you learn how people, like within any form of communication, what is sticking? What makes sense? You know, if they have to keep asking questions, like, obviously, it's not clear. You keep working on that elevator pitch because I created the world's first social wellness club. It's not a gym. It's not a spa. Trying to explain to people what that is, they didn't get it. You know, before Remedy opened, people were like, oh, it's a spa. You know, they're really going to go more than once or twice a month. I'm like, it's not a spa. I'm like, this is, think of it as like a gym if it was just self-care. People are going to come every single day. And even like, it wouldn't even be until people walked into the club and they're like, oh, I get it. Or like it would take a couple times. I'm like, why is it that only when people walk into the club and experience it, they understand what a social wellness club is? Mm-hmm. And I'm dealing with the prior context of people only knowing fitness and spas in this industry. So I think anyone trying to create something that doesn't exist, whenever you're innovating and not following and you're truly creating something from scratch, it's always harder and it's always going to take a little bit more time, but it's so worth it.
Well, yeah, you're truly differentiating yourself. You're separating yourself from the herd. You're creating a new category. New category creators are difficult.
Yeah.
You know, this guy named Steve, when he announced this new phone that was also sort of like a computer that you hold in your hand and had apps and a touchscreen, that was a category breaker.
Yeah.
Right before that, it had, you know, a different function. So, where have you had difficulties explaining? Because I'm still trying to, you know, I've been in a Remedy. I've seen and experienced it firsthand. But like, do you use comparisons? Because, you know, I think about social club. We've talked offline about, you know, there's Soho House. That's sort of a social club, right?
Yeah.
With dues and a membership and there's locations. And then there's the gym. Everyone knows the gym. You know, you either go to your local gym or you know. But it's not even a fair to say that it's a hybrid of those. It's even a different category. So what's been successful for you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I was always like, just like I knew what I didn't want to be.
Yeah.
My rule was, okay, if I want to innovate something in the wellness, health and wellness space, I can't look at anything in the health and wellness space. So I would take inspiration from designers or architects or hotels or hospitality as a whole. You know, I'm trying to create a hospitality-driven experience in the wellness world.
Right.
So whenever I'm like traveling or anywhere in the world, I'm always looking at architecture, art, different hotel standards, different how people take care of people in any other way. Like, what is that top concierge saying? You know, when you're at a, you know, a nice store buying a nice jacket or whatever it may be, I'm looking at where do I feel most taken care of and the most supported, and where do I feel most comfortable? And that is where I pull my inspiration from to figure out how can I bring those feelings into the health and wellness space, down to even like our designers or anyone we worked with. If they've worked on gyms or spas, I'm like, I don't want to work with you. I want to work with someone that has no idea about that space.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they've been building hotels and restaurants. And then we had an amazing, our first designer, Bells and Whistles. They never worked on anything in the health and wellness space, but I picked them because I'm like, I don't want you to have any like preconceived notion of what you should be doing.
Yeah.
I want you to go in completely blind and I'll teach you all the science.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I'm saying?
I do know. So, yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like you're in the people business.
You have to be. We all are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, particularly you're in the taking care of people business.
Yeah.
You're in the hospitality business, right? I mean, they just happen to be getting healed and feeling the remedy,
you know,
when they go to your place. But yeah, and that's a great way of thinking of it. So where are some of these places that have inspired you, whether it's a great hotel or a great restaurant or architecture?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like three brands that I always like really loved and looked up to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what Equinox did for luxury fitness, you know, they took something that was buzzing, made it super cool, mainstream, very artistic, like campaigns. It was like a whole new revolution in the fitness space. And I was always blown away and attracted to that, to the point where I worked for Equinox. I was a trainer at Equinox in Boston way back in college.
Sure.
And then when I was exposed to Soho House, when I moved to LA, I just thought it was the coolest thing. You know, it was like so international at the time. And there was like, you walk in and you just know, it's like, this is such a cool community. You know, it has this exclusivity feel, design's cool, they're in all the right cities,
mm-hmm.
they have the hotels, and you know, they're catering to you anywhere you go. You know, anywhere I travel, there's most likely a Soho House. You know, it's like, you know what to expect with the food or the hotel or whatever they have at each one.
Yeah, you know, and I'll just chime in here. That's one of the things, markers that you know you have a brand.
Yeah.
That if there's a shorthand, and also it's consistent, right? That's like, you can go to this Soho House and the other, it's like, okay, there's some continuity there. You probably have a brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing. You know, some people that scale too fast, or if you franchise, you lose that. And you need to protect that, because if consistency is not there, the brand can start to unfold in not a great way.
Right.
And then the other one was Restoration Hardware. You know, I was never a designer. Now I'm like heavy into the design. But I remember always walking in to a Restoration Hardware store and I'm like, this is not how I've ever seen furniture set up. I want my whole entire home like this.
Yeah.
And the reaction from the guest to walk into a space and see like and envision what your home, like dream home, would look like. And
yeah,
they put you in to the setting of like, this is what my life needs to look like. And everything was symmetrical. Everything was balanced. And then when I met Gary Friedman for the first time, and hearing his philosophies and how he talks about the spaces and the galleries, or even like they built a hotel and he's like, it's not a hotel, you know, it's my guest house. You know, mm-hmm. this is my home that I'm letting people stay in. And it's so cool to hear from some of these, you know, geniuses within the space of like building something so successful that didn't exist and paving the way. And I remember always just being like, wow, like these are so cool. And I've had the pleasure to be able to either work with or really get close with all three of those companies. And it's exciting to see, because now it's like, I want to be able to now build my vertical and innovate my space and then inspire and motivate other people. Because this industry, health and wellness industry, needs so much help. There's no way Remedy can do it by itself. And if Remedy inspires people to go to school to be doctors or to create more self-care places or do preventative medicine or longevity, I mean, anything that's helping people, every conference that I speak at, I'm like, it's our duty as anyone in the health and wellness space to do our part, right? And like, do it for the right reasons and to truly be there to help people.
Yeah, I love that. But, you know, that's not the case with everyone. I mean,
yeah,
we live in a very capitalistic society. I like it. You know, it's a meritocracy too. Like, you know, the audience rewards the best.
Yeah.
Not always, but most of the time, you know, the cream will rise to the top. But that attitude is healthy. I like it. And I think it will serve you, especially in this space. Talk about the business model a little bit more, because it is unconventional.
Yeah.
You don't want to be like Lifetime Fitness or Equinox, where you're blowing up, you know, 10, 20, 50, 1,000,
yeah,
you know, fitness centers all over the world.
Yeah.
That's not your vision. Talk about that.
Yeah. I think like it is important to say that it is almost the American dream. Like I came from nothing and I was able to build something. And I think like anyone can build anything. And I think when your intentions are right and it's exactly what you love and it's your passion, you don't ever have to put the money first. Like money follows. If you work really hard and you really care and it's what you love and you're giving it everything you have and you're a good person, it's really hard to fail. And if you fail, it's a good thing, you know? And I think people just seem to realize like you're constantly failing and that's how you grow, you know? Like you're falling uphill, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I would add one thing to that, which I think is a part of the package that you're already talking about, but
yeah,
we just didn't mention, but I want to underscore. I believe all those things that you said are true. And one caveat is, as long as you're doing that and you know that there's a demand,
yeah,
for what you're building.
Yeah.
I mean, because you could build what you love.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you could have great intentions.
Yeah.
But nobody wants it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And that's why there's starving artists, right?
Like 100%.
But, you know, baked into that assumption, you already knew that there's a lot of people who are unwell.
Yeah. People don't feel good.
Yeah.
How you make them feel good.
Yeah. So it's like an endless
supply.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, but like our whole business model is when you, like I noticed in my practice, all of my patients that I helped over those years, I created such amazing, strong relationships and bonds with them. And my patients became my investors, they became my mentors, and it was like paying it forward, but that was never the intention, right? And I think we're lucky that our business helps people, and then people recognize the brand, or they connect with the brand, or they have the memory of the brand of, oh, Remedy introduced me to this. Remedy made me feel good. Remedy helped me at my lowest. So energetically, if we're helping people all day, say there's like 100 people coming in every single day, and you have 100 positive connections, and then they leave, they talk about it, then they come back because they know it works, and then they try new things, and like that also works. Then they come with a friend, or they change their date night, or they have a meeting, or bring their whole corporate team. It's a whole snowball effect, and our job is to make sure that we continue to give the best hospitality standards, consistency, keep innovating, and then make sure that we're continually being that reliable source of trust,
mm-hmm,
and not doing something to make money and doing something that we know, like everything's in Remedy because I use it or I've used it on patients and I know that it works. You know, I would never just put something in that's flashy. You know, we could easily go into beauty or aesthetics and start injecting people and make a lot more money, but that's not what I'm here to do.
Yeah, and there are some interesting things in Remedy. The cryo chamber,
yeah,
there's the, what's the bed looking?
The red light bed.
There's a red light bed.
Or the lymphatic compression.
Name some of the features that are in, that are, you know, kind of unconventional.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, honestly, I look them all as pretty conventional because they've been around forever. Nothing's really that new.
Oh, maybe conventional is the wrong word. There's a lot of things that you wouldn't normally find in other places, in Remedy clubs.
Yeah.
List off just a few of these that we may not know about off the top of our head.
Yeah. So we have contrast suites. We have sauna suites. We have IV suites where you can do vitamin injections.
What's a contrast suite?
Contrast suite is where we have a sauna, cold plunges and showers all in one room.
Okay.
So every single, we call them experience, not treatments in the club, only because treatments have a negative connotation that something is wrong, right? So we call them experiences, but everything has a suite that is for you or your party size. So if it was just you, you get the suite to yourself. If it was, you know, the three of us, we could go get that suite together. And that flexibility is what also makes it social. So we call it social self-care. It's like your date spot, meeting spot.
Yeah.
The only thing that we can't be social with is our hyperbaric chambers right now, but in our future clubs, they will be. We have cryotherapy, lymphatic massage. We're the first place in the world to do a breathwork ice bath in a commercial setting. So just like you'd book into your favorite workout class at Remedy, you book into a breathwork ice bath class, which people go nuts over. You know, we have your acupuncturist, your chiropractor, your physio, red light therapy, cryotherapy. I mean, you name it. We have every self-care thing out there that works, but with a social twist. So like I was saying, like our whole thing is about social self-care and enjoying these experiences with somebody else or with multiple people.
Yeah, you said something that struck me. Maybe it was subtle and I hope you guys didn't miss it. I just want to underscore for you guys. So you were saying that as you were helping people solve their problem, basically, whatever that was, they became your investor.
Yeah.
They became your cheerleader, your evangelist, your whatever.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. And I think that's another page from the playbook that we can take from this. And that is when you solve people's problems, you know, there's a result and there's usually a pretty good reaction. Either they come back and they're a repeat, you know, client of yours, or if they're in a position to become an investor, like, yeah. They see the results, like it's real and like they want to be part of it. And so it's a way that you can, you know, sort of, instead of having to put your 158 page business plan together and go shop it around to this bank and that bank, you know, and it's like, you could actually just do great work and like attract the kind of people that you need to help scale your business in that way. And that includes partners and investors and other things.
I think it's like your reputation, like people, in the beginning, an early stage startup, people aren't investing in the company. They're investing in you.
I would say they're always investing in you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, fair.
You know.
Because it's important. It's like getting people getting to know you and then being able to see that you work hard, that you are a good person, that it is your passion. Like those are things like now that I'm starting to invest in a little bit of, you know, entrepreneurs and these companies, I'm like, that's what I'm looking for. It's like who has the most fight, who's in it for the right reasons, and are they a good person?
Right. I don't care, Jonathan, what you do. I just want to be part. I'll hitch my wagon to yours.
Yeah.
Because you could do Remedy today and you could do something. It's like, I just want to be, you know, riding shotgun with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't even really matter.
I'm so lucky. You know, I really have the coolest investors and it's, you know, they're in it for the right reasons. They believe in the concept. And I think that also adds to this like momentum and this like special thing that we have is like even every single dollar that has gone into Remedy has a really cool story behind it of like, you know, help them from surgery or save them, like them from this chronic issue. And
tell me one of those stories.
Yeah. I mean, oh my goodness. There's so many. As far as like someone that I helped.
What's a standout? I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we were talking off camera and you're telling me that this sort of household name brand appliance company you're doing something with now, and that's new, unconventional. Yeah.
They're the only one that wasn't a patient before.
Okay.
But
Talk about it?
I can't talk about it. Not yet.
Okay.
You can have me back in 6 months and we can do a whole podcast on it.
Okay.
But, you know, like I had like one patient that pulled out his back before the World Cup. This was like one of my first patients. He's a polo player. And, you know, someone called me. They're like, you need to go. He needs your help. Worked with him for a week. Got him playing. It was like this big, you know, comeback story. They didn't think it was going to happen. And now 9 years later, you know, I've treated every single family member, this whole entire family. And through that, you know, his family was in the hotel world, you know, and like I met so many interesting people, and through treating and helping his whole entire family, they've always been like the most supportive people that I've, you know, they're like another family to me. Mm-hmm. Or I have another investor where he was actually our first investor. His wife was supposed to get back surgery and she flew here. She booked me out like 3 months in advance and she didn't tell me anything other than she had this back issue. And she sat me down and she said, hey, you know, I have surgery planned in a week and a half, but if you can fix me in a week, I'll cancel. And I'm like, wait, what? And you know,
No pressure.
And I was with her for 7 days, all day, every day. I was like, I don't know what I can do with you for all day. She's like, I want to book you out. I don't want you to see anyone else. She canceled her surgery. And then, you know, I was obviously getting to know her and she's like, my husband would love this. You need to meet him. Finished. Next week, he calls me. He's like, I need to meet you in New York. Meet me in New York. Sat down for 10 minutes and he said, I want 10% of your business. What do I have to pay?
Oh, wow.
And that was my first investor. And he's like another whole, like his family's my family. And it's, it's cool because obviously in the beginning, you know, especially that early stage when people had no idea. When I was saying Social Wellness Club, they're like, what is this LA thing? Or they would be like, you know,
yeah,
this is the most LA concept I've ever heard. And now it's trending everywhere.
Well, I'll be honest. I still am trying to get my head around it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in it and I'm still trying to get my head around it. Yeah.
And that's the hard part with anything new.
So right? why not build 50, 100, 1,000 of these and dot them all over the world?
Because it will lose how special it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I don't want this to be the McDonald's of wellness. I want to create the most special, unique spaces. And whatever that allows me to do, like, I don't want to ever put a definitive yes or no on what my plan is because I don't know what the plan is. I know what the North Star is. I know what I want to accomplish. I know I want to constantly innovate and reach more people. But at the end of the day, I don't think that a million clubs is how I change healthcare. I think at the end of the day, it's building the strongest brand that I can build and keeping that trust and reliability and then using that brand to provide that free education and all these other verticals that we're exploring that just diversify the business, that diversify in the sense that it gives us more ways to help people than just one.
Mm-hmm. So how many do you have right now? How many?
We have two open and two in construction.
So you have New York and LA.
New York and LA. The next one is in New York. The fourth one we haven't announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do two clubs a year moving forward. You know, we opened the first one 3 months before the pandemic. The plan was always to scale at that pace, but the pandemic slowed us down, you know, and it was a good thing. Like, honestly, the universe just like slowed me down, taught me a bunch of lessons. And, you know, for those 3 years, it helped me build a foundation that I would have never had. And even like if I thought, if I got a business loan way back when I finished my doctorate, if I launched Remedy back then and it was a miracle of me getting a loan, Remedy would never be what it is today because the world wasn't ready. And I think a lot of the times people question when things don't work out or when they do, and it's like, don't worry. Like everything, like if I told you the amount of stories behind Remedy and like you get upset or you're like, how could that not work? And then you find out exactly why everything happens. And you have to trust the process.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you one of these guys that thinks everything happens for a reason? Or how do you look at the world?
I think it's half and half.
Yeah.
I think half of it is that you have to put in all the work. You can't sit there and expect everything to happen the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, you can't just manifest.
Yeah, like you can't control anyone else except you. If you control and do the best that you can do, and for all those reasons I was saying before, if you do that and then trust the process for the rest of the world and everyone else, I think that's the only way to approach it. Because the more that I believe that and the more that I like set intentions behind that and the more I work on myself and this business, the more it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think we don't understand. I don't know if we'll ever understand the power of an intention or power of a thought, but I can tell you now, like, this was just a dream. And, you know, I had like strong dreams and a strong vision and I knew what I wanted and I was like so clear on it and it happened. And now it's not about like achieving the old dream. It's like, how do I dream bigger and how am I setting up my infrastructure to make sure that I can do everything in my power?
So where are you capping things? Like how many wellness clubs will you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal for me is between 15 and 20.
Okay, and how about how many people can be part of each club. Like, you've capped that as well, yeah?
Yeah, so it's an inclusive club. So I didn't want to, if my goal is to change healthcare, I don't want to have a private members club, because then it's kind of defeating the purpose. And it's already a luxury product. I didn't want it to be even less accessible. So, but what I did was I made an inclusive club with an exclusive membership. So we capped the amount of members per club just to build community.
Mm-hmm. At what?
Each club changes based on square footage. So in LA, we capped it at 200. In New York, we capped it at 300. Mm-hmm. And now our clubs are getting bigger. So we might have a little bit more in some of those new clubs. But everyone else is a la carte. Like, anyone can make a reservation. But I really, that was important to me. And I actually, one of my other patients told me, he used to work at Nike. And he was like, John, you know, if you, even if you wanted to make this a private members club and it wasn't your mission to be more accessible, he's like, you're creating something that doesn't know. People don't know what it is. Like, you're even saying, like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
If I'm asking people to come to a private members club that have no idea what it is, there's so many societal norms that we're breaking and shifting, as well as the awareness of all these modalities and these treatments changing. You know, you have to make people be able to experience it and be able to try it to understand, because it just takes, like I was saying, it just takes people trying Remedy to understand the value add.
Yeah.
But if they were never able to go in, for me, it's not even about them coming back to Remedy. Like, say they give, we give them their first ice bath, and then ice bath became a part of their routine for the rest of their life. You know, like, that's a win in my eyes, you know?
Yeah, I think that happened on the Today Show.
Like, yeah.
You had a couple of the women from the Today Show come in and do that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is, like, we're very private on who our community is and who comes, but, like, everyone in the industry comes to Remedy. And a lot of them, it was, you know, they did their first ice bath mm-hmm. in our breathwork ice bath class.
Pretty cool.
And it's cool because then it's less for me about who they are, but more about the platform that they have and the reach and impact that they have on the people following them.
Yeah, of course.
And if Joe Schmo goes and shows that they did an ice bath and said, this just changed my life, or I've never felt this good, then say 5% of the people watching go and do it. That's that snowball effect that we need to happen just to shift awareness around, hey, you don't feel good. Here are a couple of things that might work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to try it and it works for you, great.
So let's expand that conversation we started in New York, which is, you know, I suggested, man, you should just cuddle up with, you know, another company or brand
yeah.
that has all this distribution already. For the sake of conversation, let's just say it's Starbucks, you know, like
yeah.
there's a Starbucks on every corner. You know, why couldn't you just get in bed with Starbucks and just like create this whole thing? Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Finish that conversation.
I think that goes back to protecting the brand. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying before, like, brand is everything. And my vision for Remedy is to reach more people than any company in the health and wellness industry. And one of my mentors, you know, I was sitting at dinner with him the first time we met, and he looked at me, he's like, John, you have the most, one of the most innovative concepts that I've ever seen. And this is like a very successful individual that I really respect. And I had an opportunity to go in someone else's business. And, you know, I was really thinking about it because it was 2 years in the making. And I'm like, you know, maybe this, it will help me reach more people faster. And he's like, don't you dare go in that business, because you could be way bigger than that business, but you won't be bigger than that business if you're in that business.
Yeah, it's this idea of, I mean, it's—
short-term win.
It's a short-term win, but it's also, it's going downstream.
Yeah.
Right? It's like going down market.
Yeah.
Instead of looking up market.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But like, that's where the magic happens.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm in it for the long haul. Like, this isn't like, hey, I have a finish line with Remedy and I'm done. Like, this is my life mission. You know, I think Remedy is my unicorn that really gives me a shot to achieve that goal. And, you know, I've had opportunities where people have approached me with very amazing deals and like things that would drastically change my life.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I'm here for, you know? And I think a lot of the times you get that low hanging fruit and, you know, people are excited about those moments. And like, if you're caught in the wrong time, like sometimes you're not even thinking about the impact of taking that deal or that opportunity. But if you have something that you love and it makes you happy, don't ever leave it. You know, and I think it's so hard to find your purpose in life, but if if your purpose is your passion and everything, like people will say, like, John, you work too much. Like, you don't have balance. I'm like, guys, Remedy fills so many buckets of my life. And this isn't my job. This is what makes me happy. It's what makes me healthy. It's what makes me meet new people. It's what helps like stimulate and challenge my mind. All of these things, most people don't get that from one thing. So it's hard for people to understand. But I'm like, it's just different. And that's okay, because your work doesn't have to be that for everyone. Actually, it's like probably rare that your work can be all those things.
Yeah, and I'm agreeing with you. I'm shaking my head here saying yes. But I also think that there's many ways to the top of the mountain, right? So just as an alternative point of view, it's like Elon Musk, right, who's built a lot of businesses. He had this little company called Zip2. Okay. Which then he developed a little video game, which he sold and rolled into this next venture. Then he had a little company called Zip2, which he sold, rolled into PayPal, sold PayPal, rolled that into Tesla, and rolled that into SpaceX. So it's like, you know, Elon, he's a builder.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to get to Mars. He has a big, big vision, and that's fine. Then you look at someone like Zuckerberg. I might be wrong on the historical facts here, but I think at one point, Yahoo's the thing, offered him like $1 billion.
Yeah.
And he turned that down, and everyone thought he was crazy.
Yeah.
And he stayed the course, and you know, now he's built that big meta company, which is, you know, he's still at the helm.
Yeah.
He's still building.
It's crazy.
Kevin Systrom built Instagram, you know, and he bailed out at $1 billion. Chad Hurley and his partner built YouTube. They bailed out at $1 billion and is sold to Google. And now it's, you know, I don't know, $100 billion valuation. So it's like, it all depends, right?
Yeah.
Depends on what you want, what your vision is, where your values are at. But like, do you see Remedy, like, you know, instead of like cozying up with a Starbucks or a hotel, do you see Remedy as a like hotel property or like, what's the vision for it?
I mean, I see Remedy as it can be anything. You know, I have so many different, when I'm thinking of like my wildest dreams and like really pushing the boundaries of what it could be, there's so many new verticals of this business that I want to explore.
Like, and what?
You know, like maybe there is a hotel, you know, maybe there are a lot more products. Maybe there is, you know, a digital side and a tech component that helps reach more people faster. Maybe there is more and more ways that we can tap into your individual data and help you in real time. I think my goal with like the clubs are always going to be more and more luxury. And like if there's properties, whether it's a hotel or whatever else, if we get into living or whatever that may be, those will always be very luxury. But I do think with tech and other different things that are evolving in the AI space, there's a lot there that allows us to reach so many more people and also make us so much more accessible.
Yeah, a lot of people have tried that. You know, I remember, you know, Adam Neumann's in the news again, trying to buy back WeWork, the brand that he sold.
Yeah.
And that's now, you know, WeWork's one of our partners. We love WeWork, but they are, you know, having a moment where they're restructuring and trying to get back to where they, the greatness where they were. And at one point, Adam had this concept when he was at, you know, running the company where it was like, we live.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like a community concept. And I remember they had like these summer camps where people would come and and play and hang out and camp together and sing Kumbaya and all that. So it's like very community based. And so, and another one of our favorite sort of brand stories is the story that Seth Godin offered me. And he said, you know, to determine whether or not you have a legitimate brand, is it something that someone would stand in line for? I was at the mall, you know, as one does, to get something the other day. And I was struck by the fact that outside Hermes and Chanel, there's a line of 75 people.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah, this is part of their brand. They want you to wait.
Yeah.
There's only five people in the store.
It's so funny when you see that.
But you know what?
It makes sense.
That actually is a brand decision. Their brand is, no, you can't have it right away. No, it's not accessible to everyone. Yes, it is expensive and maybe you can't afford it. That's the story that they're telling you about their brand. That's part of their values.
Yeah.
And so if you're someone who's willing to wait in line and who values exclusivity and, you know, whatever those other touch points, then you, that brand resonates with you. Right.
Yeah.
And so Seth was like, you know, imagine if Nike built this hotel. And Nike hasn't built a hotel, but you can sort of close your eyes and imagine what it would look like and feel like and what amenities it might have, you know, in the lobby or in the room. And maybe this is kind of the exercise you're doing with Remedy, right? And maybe there actually will be a Remedy hotel at some point, but it's like the opposite of that is generic.
Yeah.
And that's a strategy too. I mean, Hyatt has that strategy. Marriott has that strategy. There are some nice Marriott hotels. But for the most part, when you're looking for a Marriott, you just want one that's like a stone's throw from wherever you're having your business meeting.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be special. It just has to be clean. And you hope, you know, the price has to be good enough. So, and same like with generic medicine, you don't care who makes it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, does it get rid of my headache or, you know, does it clear up my skin rash or whatever it is? And so a brand is very distinct or distinctive. It's also something you'd be willing to pay a little bit more for, a premium, and it's special, and it's unique. And it also, it lives in the hearts and minds of the people who experience it.
Yeah.
So once you create it, and then there's this touch point, then you're sort of done at that point, because then, you know, like I was in a Remedy club, and I looked at the hyperbaric chamber. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I got in the cryo.
Yeah.
Chambers,
crowd chamber.
First time ever. It was a little bit scary, to be honest.
Yeah, like, it's definitely intimidating.
Well, only because you get down to nothing.
Yeah,
all your clothes are off, and you have like a little wrap, a little robe.
Yeah,
that's basically a curtain that goes around your waist.
Yeah,
and you're thinking this is like what 200 below zero,
-160,
and I'm thinking just logically, like, aren't my extremities sort of in danger here? Like,
no, I mean, that's why there's a safe amount. You know, if we locked you in there, there's definitely a tipping point where the cold is not
right
good.
Well, so then I actually got in, and yes, there was frost, you know, piling up on my eyelashes.
Okay.
and things are getting cold, but like everything below and protected by the curtain was fine. But it's actually a great experience.
Yeah.
I felt invigorated. It was a similar, I've cold plunged a lot, so I knew what that was like. I wanted to go in the cryo chamber to experience that. But it's like, now I have that experience, and now, like in a Remedy club, now I sort of know what that feels like and looks like. And that now is what is living in my heart and mind as the brand, you know, and I got to experience some of the other
feelings
and meds. Yeah. And it's great because it's very peaceful. And I mean, I could see myself just chilling there or reading a book on the Shea Lounge or.
And that's the goal.
Getting an adjustment or, you know, like, so I think you're doing good work. I think you're going in a good direction. I'm super excited to see where this evolves.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this year's the year. I think people are going to see a big inflection point in our business. And, you know, we've been working so hard behind the scenes. And I think with these two new clubs that are opening, people are going to see a new side, a new elevated side of Remedy, a new, more social, experiential. And we're learning. You know, I think the longer that we're around, the longer, more data that we have, and the more that we can understand our guests, the more we can take care of them.
Yeah. What have you learned? Maybe let's touch on that.
Yeah. I think our number one thing is people really have loved the social side. You know, I think people, that was a big hope. You know, when I launched it and it said social self-care, I'm like, here's your date spot, your meeting spot. You know, if it didn't hit, it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because it could just be like people just go and do their services like any other wellness space. But the social side, and we call them social substitutions, like people are really looking for new ways to connect with people.
Yeah.
And also to connect with like-minded individuals. You think if like you're single and you're in New York City, it's like, how are you going to meet new people? Like people go to a bar, people go out at night, and alcohol is a depressant and dissociative. If I'm trying to connect more with people, people think that they connect more with alcohol, but you don't. You know, like,
yeah,
being with somebody new in a heightened state of self,
yeah,
you are really knowing, like, is this a connection? Is there, like, well, your gut intuition is even stronger. And it's cool just to see, like, wow, like, we can really help improve someone's health and their social life at the same time. And that was something that was a big priority of mine.
Yeah. There's a really good chance that, you know, if you love to cold plunge and I love to cold plunge, or you care about what you eat and I'm caring about, it's like, we probably become pretty good friends.
Yeah.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know this term, Huberman husband?
No.
Do you know who Andrew Huberman is?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like,
he's the best.
So there's this whole kind of meme, or like this trend of, well, there's, I think, a large number of women who love Andrew for obvious reasons. He's,
yeah,
he's a stud on every level. But, like, there's the husband side of it. So, like, someone like me who, like, sees what Huberman does and tries to emulate what he does, either, like, you know, tries protocols or live that lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so you become this Huberman husband, you know,
okay.
This husband who lives this lifestyle like Andrew Huberman. And so basically what I'm saying in a fancy way is just, like, there's like-minded people.
Yeah.
And when you're around like-minded people, it's so easy to become friends. If, like, oh, you know, you care about this and, oh, you don't do that, but you do. It's like, oh, we can instantly, like, have so much in common, be quick friends, you know?
Yeah. And if you look at, like, people are more lonely than ever before, especially, like, people are more isolated. If you look at, like, I think I was listening to a statistic the other last week about how, like, that with the average male adult and the amount of friends that they have. And I forgot what the actual statistic was, but I was like, people just don't have friends.
Yeah, it's like less than one.
Yeah.
less than one friend. How is that even possible?
And that's hard. Like, as an adult, we need human connection. We need communities of people. So if we can be part of that and give you one of your communities or one place that you know that you might find people that are like you.
Yeah.
That's so important to me. And I hope that as we start going into more and more cities, that people always look at Remedy as one of their communities that make up, you know, their life. Because even in my practice, and, like, what even part of the thing I was telling you before about the framework and this whole training program, one of them is making sure you have five communities. And if you, like, what I mean by community is anything that you go to on a regular basis. It has to be like a weekly or maybe bi-weekly. But it's something where you're put in an environment around different people. It's part of your routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just found that more and more, if you look at, like, history, people used to have so many communities, and now we're having barely any, or maybe just one, or maybe their work is every community that it shouldn't be. But I think a lot of the times we just end up gravitating towards one community or one group of people because they're most like-minded. But as a human, we need to be pushed and hear different perspectives and diversity and not just be around people that think and sound the same.
Yes.
Yeah. And I also think that by having these five communities, like, I've tried to have five in each city, you know, and it's what value add do I add to each one of them, you know, to make sure that I'm adding to that community. But then also, what does that one make me happy? Does that one really help push my health? Does this one make me social? And getting different things out of different groups, not only is it to help with the perspective of learning from those people and getting different energetic exchanges, but it's also fulfilling something that helps amplify one vertical of your life.
Yeah, maybe there's a whole group, you know, that keeps you honest.
Yeah.
Calls you out on your bullshit.
And it's important.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe that group of a couple friends that you have isn't going to do any of those things. And And I really, the more that I've been trying to do that, because I didn't really start pushing this until I moved to New York, I've just seen the biggest impact on my mental health and just my overall everything, you know? And I think it's really important for me, because I always say, like, human connection and community is everything, but leaning into that and seeing really what has come out of it in my life in the past year and a half by making that a priority has been probably one of the most significant things for not only my health, but my personal and professional growth.
Yeah, that rings true with me. I mean, I would co-sign that. There's a Jim Rohn quote, right? Like, you are the sum total of the five people that you hang around.
Yeah.
Or you are what you eat. It's like, you have to think about, you know, the the water holes that you're hanging out in. Like, are they 100% helping you, or are they toxic? Are they additive? Are you, what are you bringing to the table? And I love that you're creating an opportunity for people to come together who are like-minded in the wellness space. It just makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And I think in New York, I was having trouble because I had like my four. I'm like, I can't figure out this fifth community. And, you know, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just have, like, maybe I'll create a dinner party where I just bring in like 5 to 10 people each week and have dinners, when I'm like, I live in a studio. So that wasn't possible.
Mm-hmm. Pickleball.
So, yeah. Well, now what I've been figuring out is what I want to launch as my fifth one in New York is like a Remedy After Hours, where each week I host an invite only thing after the club closes. Just like, just some self-care love, you know? And it's, maybe I want to connect certain people because they might be good for business or relationships or good friends, mm-hmm. and kind of just like playing the connector, but then doing it with self-care, which also helps, you know, make them healthier. Nice way to start off their week. And I'm excited to launch that because I'm like, okay, like that's where people can get creative. And maybe it's a walking club, maybe it's a book club, and it could be anything, mm-hmm. but just know if you can't find the community, you can create one, or you can create all of them, you know?
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going.